So we were discussing the topic of Amira l'Nachri, telling a non-Jew to do work for you on Shabbos or Yontov. And, you know, work, what I mean work is, I mean, one of the Lamed Test 39 prohibited activities, turning on lights, driving, all the different type of things like that. So we know there's a prohibition, either according to Rambam, because the concern is Shabbos become light in your eyes, because if someone else is doing it, so you'll continue to, if this person's not around, you'll forget and you'll end up doing it yourself. It's a preventive measure. According to Rashi and Avodah Zarah, it's because it's the mere instruction which is the problem. That's not an appropriate Shabbos talk to tell a guy to do something which is prohibited. And the third thing is, Rashi and Shabbos about your appointing him as a shliach. So, as a messenger. So, and we pointed out to this, so as a general it's prohibited. However, there are exceptions to the rule. So, the Gemara in Erevin discussed the question of if you didn't have any water for the Bris Milah during the days of the Talmud, in order to do a circumcision, you had to wash the baby before and after the Milah. And if you didn't do it, it was a danger. Today we have modern technology, antibiotics, other ointment, we don't do this anymore, we don't need it. There's nothing special that you have to use hot water, that was just a way of preventing infection and healing the baby. So the Gemara's case was, you didn't have any water, and so at present you could not do the bris, because you don't have the water. So, however, there was water already boiled in another place. So the question is, can you get a Gentile to carry the water, that's ready hot water, to carry it for you in a place where it's not a public place, it's in someone's courtyard, can you carry it for the Bris Milah? So,
I suppose you can, because of the Bris Milah.
Right, so that was the three-way opinions in the Gemara. We had Rambam and the Rif say, that's the classical case of shvus to shvus to maka mitzvah, that telling a guy to do something for you is only rabbinical. Telling non-carrying, if I would carry it in this spot, it would only be rabbinical. So two derabbanans, and you have a mitzvah milah, so it's okay. So the Gemara says, so that's the Rambam and Rif. The Baal Itzah says, no way, but Makkah Mitzvah, it's mutter. You're permitted to even do a biblical malacha with Tzarech Mitzvah. So in other words, I could get a guy even to heat up hot water if I want for the Milah. And the Ramban writes, normally speaking, there is no Heter B'Makkah Mitzvah. It's only a special case by Milah, because Milah is Docha Shabbos. So the Gemara spoke about Milah, as we assume, according to anyone, you can do milah. The question is, how far could you go? Could you only violate a rabbinical prohibition by carrying in a chatzer? Or can I even violate a biblical prohibition? So that's a discussion in the Rishonim. So either way we know it, there's a mitzvah to go ahead, and you could do the milah. Right, we assume even biblically, let's say, we assume even biblically speaking, you could violate to do milah. We saw living in the land of Israel was another exception, the Gemara says, and also a burial. So the question is, what, are there any other leniencies besides the ones the Gemara mentioned now? Like, do even when a malacha daraisa, so So the post can bring down a list. So number one is Ben Hashmashas. Ben Hashmashas is the time, it's twilight. It's a time between sunset and then the three stars come out. And that's known in halacha as Safik Yom, Safik Laila. That's known as doubtful day, doubtful night. And the question is, so normally you can't tell a guy to do malacha for you. However, during this time of Ben HaShemashos, one is permitted to tell a guy to do any malacha for you for any of the following reasons. Either Shabbos needs, you need something for Shabbos. If you don't do this, it will cause substantial financial loss. Let's say you didn't light your Yahrzeit candle and you want to get it lit. Or for mitzvah purposes. However, this let's assume this has to be done, you know, that's a discussion how long. For argument's sake, I think Rav Moshe writes, he gives you 30 minutes after sunset. Everything before sunset, it's not Shabbos yet. Assuming you didn't accept Shabbos. But it's not Shabbos yet. For the 30 minutes after, that's Ben HaShemashos, and therefore, you ought to get a guy to do anything you need for Shabbos needs, to avoid financial loss, to light your Yahrzeit candle you forgot to light, or for a mitzvah. So let's give an example of each. What do you mean for the needs of Shabbos? So let's say you could tell a guy to turn on an electric stove, even to warm up foods which aren't essential for Shabbos, but it's Ben HaShemashos, so you could be lenient. You could tell a guy to turn on the electric stove. Another example would be you could tell a guy to turn off the bedroom light. We'll see there are other hetayim anyway, but to turn the bedroom light. There's no prohibition during Ben HaShemashos. If the woman forgot to light Shabbos candles, she could tell a guy to light them during Ben HaShemashos. Right? And another one is, you could tell a guy to turn on a light in a room that, let's say, the family members need to read on Shabbos. Normally, maybe we'll see, maybe not allowed, but during Ben HaShemashos you're allowed. Or, you know, a guy could get foods for you need. And also, he could place the food on the stove, etc. So those are, Shabbos needs are pretty clear. What about to avoid financial loss? So let's say there's a concern your car is going to be stolen. So you could get a guy to drive it into your driveway or your garage somewhere or put it somewhere safe. That's okay during Ben HaShemashos. Or you could get a guy to lock up your place of business and set up the alarm in your business in order to, again, to avoid a potential financial loss. What do you mean, Yahrzeit candle? Let's say one forgot to light a Yahrzeit candle. So therefore, that's going to cause them distress that they forgot to light the candle. And therefore, to alleviate the distress, we permit, that's considered as a need, and therefore, you're permitted to get a guy to light it. Some even have a bigger chiddush that even on Shabbos itself, you could tell a guy to do it. But certainly during Ben HaShemashos. And Sarach Mitzvah. Regard to any mitzvah, not just mitzvahs relating to Shabbos. Of course, those are the things that, you know, what about Ben HaShemashos Saturday night? That's different than Friday night. It's best to not to rely on a guy. You know, B'Sha'as Adchak, so then one can rely on the same heterim. And according to Rav Moshe, Ben HaShemashos wouldn't begin to about, is in New York anyway, about 10 minutes after sunset. But either way, that's a separate discussion. So we see Ben HaShemashos where we could be lenient, and you could tell a guy to do things. So either we said, either with Sarah, you know, with for to avoid financial loss, Shabbos needs, Yahrzeit candle, etc. Another thing you're allowed to do is there's a concept called psik resha. Psik resha means that the Gemara's example is, I guess, you know, times have changed. We have different toys to play with, but the Gemara talks about cutting off a chicken's head for the child to play with. But the Gemara says, but what do you mean? You're killing the chicken. So that's a psik resha means you do act A, which is going to cause act B. Cutting off the chicken's head, per se, let's say for the kid to play with, is okay, but you're going to cause the death. You know, obviously, you know, that's a separate discussion, but that's just an example the Gemara gives. But it's going to cause the death of the chicken, which is not okay. It's a hypothetical thing. Obviously, you can't kill the chicken.
No,
the person, I didn't want to kill the chicken, I just wanted to chop his head off. So even though, but I'll give you a more practical example of psik resha. Psik resha is a person opens up a refrigerated door, which is permitted, you're allowed to eat on Shabbos. The problem is, the light bulb goes on when you open the door. So obviously what we do is we unscrew the light bulb completely or unscrew it that doesn't go on Shabbos. Some people just leave it off the whole week, but that's up to you. The issue is on Shabbos. So the issue, that's called a psik resha. I'm permitted to open up a door, I'm just not permitted to turn on a light. So we say, but since by automatically opening the door, the light's going to come on, it's like you're mechaven for it. It's like you had kavana for it. And therefore it's usur. So you can't open up a refrigerated door if you know the light's going to go on. If you don't know the light's going to go on, that's a separate question. That could be like the case of, it's called the Suffolk psik resha, that's like a case of davar she'eino mischaven. That's a case where a person's pulling a chair on the grass and he doesn't have a mind to make holes. So if it's going to happen all the time, that's a psik resha. But if sometimes it makes holes, sometimes it doesn't, so then we assume it's okay because that's something you had intent for. So some say, you know, so suffix psik resha, let's say you're not sure if the light's on, so then it's a discussion, then some say it's permitted to open the door because you don't know. It's a separate, what do you do if it is on, then about shutting the door because then you're closing the light. That's a separate discussion, but that's a case of suffix psik resha. So the question, so normally psik resha is usur. So, you know, let's say you're not allowed to plant on Shabbos. So therefore, if you wash your hands over plants and need water, you are only washing my hands, but if it's going to plant, so we generally assume it's a problem. However, they bring down, based on a Truma Sadeshin that the Ramah brings down, that you're permitted to tell a guy to do something which is a psik resha. Since you're telling him, even though it will result in a prohibited malacha being performed, and yet, so for instance, let's say something's in the car, right? You left something in the car for Shabbos. Let's say, you know, you left your baby stroller or whatever. You left something you need on Shabbos. You left in your car, your talis or whatever it is. You're allowed to ask a guy to open the door for you even though the light's going to go on because it's a step removed. Even though normally, in general rule, we assume it's prohibited. However, for a psik resha, it's permitted. Another example would be you've got to get a guy to turn on hot water for you, even though the result will be that cold water is going to come out from, the new cold water is going to come in and it's going to heat up, but since you only got kavana for the for the first part of the water you want to, the heating of the additional water is a psik resha, and therefore we say during Bet HaShemesh, you know, therefore we're matirit. So that's another example. Or I said as a refrigerator way. We know in general you can't open up a door because it doesn't cause the light go on. Let's say one forgot to do it. So it's permitted to tell a guy to open the refrigerator door because it's a psik resha. He also then maybe has to close the door because also it's a psik resha the other way, you're extinguishing. You know, if you need more food to come out of the fridge, so therefore you might as well get the guy to unscrew the, you know, unscrew it. So you can ask him to unscrew the bulb if there'll be no guy later available, or there's no other way to preserve the food. Right, that's another example. Another is a chole she'im bo sakana. Any type of chole, we say, a person who's sick, you know, right, not deathly ill, but someone who's confined, let's say, to his bed. An illness which requires bed rest, let's say flu, chest congestion, intense pain, etc., migraine, headache, a severe earache, all these things, it's permitted to get a guy to do. Let's say you need medication, so you could get the guy to drive to the pharmacy and pick up the medication for you. A guy's allowed to turn on lights for the sick person or turn them off. He could call a doctor for you. He could even boil hot water for you. And he could even ingest, you know, so basically, there is no Amir Lenachri when it's B'makom Choli. The rules were never set. There's no prohibition. So, Ben HaShemashos, Psik Resha. What about, the other issue is, it's usually prohibited to benefit from a malacha done from a Jew. A malacha done for a Jew on Shabbos. However, when it comes to a chola, She'ein bo sakana, it's permitted for a Jew to benefit, as long as there's no concern that he might do more. For you know, he's not adding, you know, anymore. He's not going to make a lot, so other people who aren't sick can use it. Therefore, if a guy turns on a light, others could benefit because there's no additional. He's turning on a light, you know, for the whole room, so he's not doing anything special for me, so I could come in and read. But if a guy cooked food for a sick person, then you can't eat the leftovers. The concern is that he's going to make more for everyone when he only can make for the sick person. And of course, cold weather, a chole, you could turn on the heat, etc. So all those things, right. There's another character called Amira La Amira. It's called a guy telling another guy. If a Jew tells a guy to tell another guy to do malacha, it's called amir al amir, literally tell it's called. That's a machlokes achronim about das avodes hagershuni is machmir, the chavetz yar is meko. And some of a big chiddush that he made, Ba'omer with Nachri v'Shabbos Atzmo. Right, so therefore, so we saw in the case of significant financial loss that we know a guy could do a malacha d'rabbanan, but not a malacha d'araisa. However, let's say it's going to cause significant financial loss. So then you can have a guy to tell another guy. And it's considered amir al amir only if the second guy will be acting as the agent of the first guy. However, the Jew may not ask the first guy this to be a mere broker. etc. So that's another example, amira la amira. Let's say, I'll give you examples of this. If one needs an important letter delivered on Shabbos, it has to get there, let's say, it's a tax thing, it has to be, you know, it has to be, or maybe it's something, you're going to lose the scholarship for $5,000, you know, you can make up your own case. But if one needs an important letter delivered on Shabbos to avoid significant financial loss, he may bring the letter to the post office on Friday and tell the clerk that he wants to be sent overnight express to be delivered on Shabbos. This is considered amir l'amir, why? Because the Jew did not directly tell the guy who will deliver the letter. He just told the clerk, who will in turn transmit the letter to someone else until the letter is ultimately delivered. So that's as opposed to giving it to a guy to drive over, the amir l'amir, one guy tells another guy that's permitted, or a person's car broke down and he needs it repaired on Shabbos because he has to, he needed his car right after Shabbos because he's going to lose a lot of money. So he's got to tell a guy to take the car to the mechanic and have it repaired on Shabbos. Again, it's amir l'amir. He merely instructed one guy to commission the gentle mechanic to do the repairs, since he might otherwise suffer a financial loss. So let's say the lights went out in the shul and the congregation are unable to daven or learn, or the rabbi can't give the Dvar Torah, it's permissible to ask a guy to turn on the lights or something like that. Or let's say a mikshul derabim. If let's say many people, let's say the Erev broke and many people who are unaware of this are going to continue carrying. In order to avoid this mass desecration of Shabbos, it's permitted to get a guy to fix the Erev, even if it involves a malacha da'oraisa. And then, of course, we have the case of Bris Milah. We know it has to be performed on Shabbos, on the eighth day, even on Shabbos. But let's say the mo forgot one of the things necessary, the knife, the medication. A guy may be told to prepare them even if it involves a malacha d'oraisa of rent. A guy may be asked to drive a car to get the knife, medicine, etc. And also, what about bringing a baby to shul? So the Mishnah Berurah writes, one may not make arrangements with the Gentile to bring a baby to shul in order to perform the Bris Milah there, since the bris can take place at home. So therefore, it's better not to rely on this. You know, if you can do the bris at home, do it. But, you know, so, you know, those are, so, you know, those are some of the leniencies. We had the case of Ben Hashmashas, that the time between sunset and the three stars were lenient in you getting a guy to do even malacha d'oraisa for you. It's not definite Shabbos. Psik resha, you know, turning on the refrigerator because it's not something direct. The illness, for certain cases of amir l'amira, that telling a guy to tell another guy is okay. You know, public mitzvah, like the eruv falls down. That's, you know, widespread transgression. And then, you know, the concept of Ben Hashmashos. Those are, different examples of when, even though normally you can tell a guy. There's also, bless you. Because normally, even though there's a general prohibition of telling a guy to do malacha for you, in addition that you can't tell him to do malacha, he says you can't get benefit from it either. So what's the point? If I could get the guy to do it for me but I can't benefit, so what actually am I gaining from it? So, well, because the Mishnah says in Shabbos, Kuf Chav Beis Amud Aleph 122a, that Jew cannot benefit by an act a guy does on behalf of the Jew. We see if a guy does something for himself, then you know it's different. We see the Mishnah says you can get benefit as long as there's no concern that he's doing it for you also. But so if he's doing it, let's say he turns on the light for himself to read, so he's not doing anything extra. It's the same, you know. But let's say each light, then that would be a problem. But so there are a few exceptions to the rule where you're allowed to get benefit from the guy. So first is Rabbeinu Baruch in the Sefer HaTrumah says, if a guy lights a candle in a room that already has some light, there is no prohibition to benefit from this new light. Why? If you have, let's say, a little candle in the room and you're reading and the guy turns on the whole light, there's no problem of benefiting. Why? Why is this an exception?
Because it's better for you to have more light.
Right, no. That would make it worse usually because he's doing it for you. But the reason why it's okay here is because since it was possible to read without the light being... Let's say if you're sitting in a dark room and a guy turns on the light, you can't read in that room. Mm-hmm. But if there's a small candle in the room or a little light on and he comes and turns on a big light, you can, because one of the exceptions to the rule is as long as you could have benefited, you could have read it without, even though now it's easier to read, it's okay. The benefit, we assume, is insignificant. And the Torah adds, however, after the original light is extinguished, it's also to benefit from the light because, you know, that means now you won't be able to read. That's how the Shulchan Aruch paskens. That's one exception. If he turned on the light, it's pitch dark, then you can't read. If he did it for you. Maybe if he did it for himself, maybe you can. But if he did it for you, he can't do it. However, if you had some light in the house already, you can. That's one exception. Another exception is he distinguishes between direct benefit and indirect benefit. What do we mean by direct benefit and indirect benefit? So, in the Sefer Kehilos Shabbos, he makes this distinction. He says, to benefiting from a prohibited activity performed by a guy, he says, if a non-Jew opens an envelope on Shabbos, right? He writes, it's permitted to benefit from the contents of the envelope since this is not considered direct benefit. He also rules that there's no prohibition in benefiting from the absence of light caused by the extinguishing of a candle on Shabbos. Likewise, he rules the only type of benefit that's prohibited is direct benefit. Because here, so in the case of shutting off the light is in direct benefit, as opposed to turning on the light for you, you're directly benefiting. Or let's say opening up the envelope, so he says it's permitted. Ramosha disagrees. Ramosha Feinstein rules, he prohibits benefiting from a building where the door was open, which keys that were prohibited brought from a, you know, carried with from a public domain. It could be anyway that Ramosha would agree to sleeping in a room whose light was put out because that is not considered a positive benefit. However, if the benefit is positive but indirect, so the case of the envelope, it's positive but indirect. So Ramosha says he has a problem. But in the case of the light, it's negative and indirect. Some hold even positive and indirect is good enough, but that's everyone agrees, positive, negative, and indirect. So Shlomo Zalman Auerbach took both sides of the argument in different points of his life. He concluded there is no prohibition to benefit from prohibited activity unless the benefit is positive and direct. So indirect and negative is definitely okay. And the third example the Mishnah gives is If a guy does something for his own benefit, but the Gemara limits this leniency to cases where there is no concern that the guy will perform additional prohibited activities. For example, if a non-Jew cuts grass for his animals and there is leftover grass, it's prohibited for the Jewish acquaintance to feed the leftover grass, because there is a concern that the non-Jew may cut more grass for the Jew. Regarding a candle that was lit by a non-Jew, the candle that a non-Jew lights up is also sufficient for the Jew. That's what we mentioned. So the Mishnah says that you can get benefit from a guy could do, if I'm sitting in a dark room and a guy turns on the light for me, it's a no-go. But if I'm in a dark room and the guy turns on the light for himself, so that's one of the exceptions to the rule, because that's only turning on light, which there's no extra concern. But if it's something like cutting grass or cooking food, so then you wouldn't be able to benefit the concern of Shema Yarbi Abishvilo. He might end up making more for you. So therefore we... it's prohibited to get hana, benefit, from anything a guy does for you. So therefore what... So if it's a case of makkah, mitzvah, shvista, shvus, etc., there's no problem getting benefit. We say there is no prohibition of amir l'nachri. But in the cases where it's a case where it would be permitted, you could avoid the technical, hinting without giving a command or something. So the question is, what's the difference if that's permitted? You can't get any benefit. So we gave a couple of exceptions. Is Rabbeinu Baruch, and the Torah extends it. If you already can benefit, he's just making it easier for you, so then it's okay. We don't consider that significant. Like if you already have a small light on, if he turns on a big light, you could still continue reading. However, when your light goes out, you have to leave. Then we had a discussion with Moshe and others, whether if it's indirect and positive. So Rav Moshe writes that if someone was Mechal Shabbos and he used the keys to open the door, you shouldn't benefit from that, because that's indirect, but it's positive. Some say indirect and positive is still okay, like opening the envelope. But everyone would agree that indirect and negative, so let's say if I want to sleep in my room, so I could say, I could tell him I want the light off because it's indirect and it's negative. And the third thing is that if a guy does it for himself with the qualification that there's no concern, he might do more for you. So the light case is no concern, but in the case where the grass or cooking, there would be a concern. Any questions?
Where does all this come from?
What do you mean?
What is the source of this?
Of telling a non-Jew, which source of what specifically?
What's the source of all these rules? Where does it come from?
It comes from the Mishnah, the Gemara. You mean like where does the prohibition of telling a guy to do something for you come from? Yeah, so... we assume, biblically speaking, it's 100% okay. The rabbis, because of either the concern that if you end up having a guy doing stuff for you, you'll end up doing it yourself, or because your mere instruction's a problem, or because he's like a messenger, for any of those reasons, the rabbi said, not only you can't do it, but you can't have a guy do it. There he's here to lock up shop. Perfect timing.
Just got in.
I know. I said you had a lock up shop.
I mean, I just got into Hamilton.
Yeah, I know. That's why I already gave you I gave you an excused absence. I said you were in.
No, I thought you were going to start from the top for me.
Absolutely. Okay. Right here.
But there is a difference between asking a servant or asking an outsider, isn't there? Because the servant lives in your house.
Yeah, correct, that could be worse.
Yeah.
Like a ger tosha, right. And the difference is also, let's say, right, that is true, because it says gericha, but there's also differences, let's say, between independent contractors, day workers, because a kabbalah, and let's example, one may give a garment to the cleaners or shoes to a shoemaker or a car to a mechanic before Shabbos, because they're getting paid to do the job. Because you know, he's doing it for his benefit. You don't care when he does it. He could do it Friday afternoon.
What if he does it on Shabbos?
No, but that's his issue, not yours. You're not telling him to do it on Shabbos. He's doing it for his benefit. That's on the. So a gentile hired in this matter is considered to be doing the malach on his own behalf, since the Jew is paying him for the completed job. Right, like a shoemaker, a tailor, a dry cleaner, they're doing it for themselves. I'm not, and therefore, their benefit. I'm not benefiting from the fact he's doing it. I didn't tell him to do it on Shabbos. Work on Sunday. I don't care. Do it Friday afternoon. So that's a, right? Or, you know, then there's time-related ones. You know, that's why some say that one may not give his shoes to a shoemaker a few minutes before Shabbos and request that they be ready immediately after Shabbos. That would be problematic. But in general, you know, let's say a guy doesn't work on Sunday. Some posts can say one may still engage him late Friday afternoon for a job that can be completed on Monday. Since you can do it on Sunday, the guy's doing it for himself. He's choosing not to work on Sunday. I prefer him to do it. You know, I'm not telling him not to work. Or a Jew may not allow his secretary to work on Shabbos. Normally one allow a cleaning lady to do prohibited malacha. You know, that's, you know, so then it gets into the differences in that. You know, a plumber, and then delivery and pickups, newspaper deliveries. Newspapers in America can be ordered for delivery on a weekly basis, 7 days a week, or on a weekend basis, 2 days, right? Ordering newspaper delivery on a 7 day or weekend basis, according to some, is considered a mir liakum and not recommended. It is preferable, where possible, to order the weekday and Sunday only schedule. In this way, all problems of amir, if you do the following, it's preferable, where possible, to order the weekday and Sunday only schedule. That's not usually an option, especially with the fact they don't make it on Sunday. If only a 7 day delivery is available, one may order delivery only if he specifies that no delivery will be made on Shabbos. If the newspaper company refuses service unless he accepts delivery all 7 days, he may not contact the service because of Mara Zion. You know, it's a different opinion in terms of, you know, so, like it's less of an issue in you know, where Hamilton, where it's mostly Goyim, where they're doing it for Gentiles, you know, not Jews. But, you know, but some people won't have,
So it's only an issue if a Jew were to become involved in the delivery process for your, or work for your delivery, is that right?
No, that's certainly a problem. But the question is,
it goes beyond that.
Yeah, that's a given. You know, if you have a problem with the Jewish delivery guy, then yeah, you're benefiting from, right, that's not on the table.
Right.
But just don't ask your delivery guy if he's Jewish. But the second issue is, even if he's not Jewish, and we have a general rule, I can't get a guy to do something I can't do, so then we have to look for different leniencies.
And if it's arranged ahead of time?
No, so that depends. So obviously that makes it better, because according to some, the problem is the mere instruction. So according to door number two in Rashi, it would be okay. But we don't normally assume in general that by itself isn't enough. You know, how much you have to get into how much of a need is it, and etc.
So if, let's say, the lights were not on in a room,
right,
how does one go about getting them turned on? I understood that you could, if, I mean, you could have a goy turn the light on as long as you didn't directly instruct them to do that. You could point out that there's...
No, so, well, number one is, well, no, general turning your light on would be a problem because unless there's a need, like I'm saying, in other words, turning light in the shul because people have to read, I'm saying is,
right.
it's an easier issue turning the light off for you because it's indirect benefit, you want to sleep. But if the guy's doing it for you, it's more problematic because then you can't, because even if you hinted to him in the appropriate way, but then you can't get benefit from it. So the exceptions I said were if he's turning the light on for himself,
yes.
And then you come in, let's say he turns on the light so he could read, so you could go in and read. But if he can't turn on the light that you could read, then you can't get benefit from that. But let's say there was a little light on, you could read, but not so great.
Right.
And he puts on a big light, then we consider that's okay, it's not a significant improvement. So the more, or let's say some say as long as it's indirect and then negative or positive. Let's say indirect, let's say to get a guy to open up an envelope, could you benefit from the contents of it? So some say, yeah, because it's indirect. There's another others say, you need indirect and negative. You can't be a positive. But, right, so, but it's not so simple. What I'm saying is, so just to get a guy to turn on your light because for not a good enough reasons, you know, it's problematic.
Does it matter if there's more people involved than just yourself?
Yeah. Sarche Rabim, if it's for more of a public people or for a mitzvah purpose, and then we could find other leniencies.
Can you be more direct in those cases? Can you be absolutely direct?
Yeah, in which case?
Well, let's say there's a party going on Shabbos, and there are lights off in the room where this party is supposed to occur.
That could mean a party.
There are a lot of people that are involved.
Why not lunch? What do you mean a party?
Well, let's say it's Kiddush even. Let's say somehow the lights are not turned on or someone turns the lights off in the room.
Yeah, so then if you assume that's considered, that would be considered makom mitzvah, you know, some would, you know, again, you know, you'd have different opinions on the matter as always, but some would say, yeah, that would be considered makom mitzvah. And then there's no prohibition of a meal or not, because you can tell them directly even.
Uh-huh.
The cases is when it's not a mitzvah purpose.
Right.
Let's say you just want to read
right.
something, let's say, something neutral. So then you can't get a guy to turn the light on for you.
Right.
If he turns it on for himself, that's something else. Then
right.
you could benefit. But I said if there's a little light already in the room and you're just making it
right.
better, right.
What about if it's your family having dinner?
Yes, the same thing. It's a makom mitzvah.
Uh-huh.
Suda Shabbos. But, you know, I say it's hot, you need the air conditioner, it's cold, you need the heater. The whole works.
Well, we don't have any heater, so that's not an issue.
Only in the summer we do.
Right. And there's no air conditioning.
I guess it works by solar and there's no sun in the winter in Canada.
Right. That could be it. Could be a lot of things.
That's what I heard. Someone told me there's no sun in the winter in Canada. Could you confirm that or deny that? Or you'd rather have no comment?
I would say that there's less sun, not no sun.
Of course.
Not enough sun to run solar-powered
eating.
Household systems.
Mm. What do you think?
There's lots of sun in winter.
See, lots of sun.
The days are shorter, though.
Maybe because you're on the other side of Main Street, I think that's the difference.
Yes, probably. I like that other side. Not the right side or the wrong side. The good side or the bad side, just the other side.
No, the